Welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Before we start, I want to say thank you to people who donated to support the station and this program, and particularly Greg and Yarda. I'm very appreciative of the support over the years. And everybody knows what we do, and so we're going to do some more of it. Our guest is Luke Barron. Luke Francis Barron. He's the author of Fox Hunt. He's already been on the program. By the way, it's a great novel. It's a new novel. And part of the attraction of it for me is that it has, in order to kind of date and set scenes, fighters are referred to from an era when boxing is always interesting, but boxing was particularly, I think, alive in the period that Luke is talking about in the novel Fox Hunt. Luke, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here.
Well, as we promised one another, as things develop in the boxing world, we would ask you to help us understand it.
Yeah.
I think a particularly big story, a certainly intriguing one, and I assume it would catch your interest, is that we just had a fight that I have to confess I wasn't following closely. A friend of mine who does real aficionado into pugilism, he immediately wrote to me on a Sunday morning and said, "Did you see that fight?" And I had to confess I didn't know. And it's quite embarrassing because the reputed pound-for-pound champion of the world had fought, his name is Canelo Alvarez. He had deigned to fight the light heavyweight champion of the world, Mr. Belov, who happens to be Russian. Canelo is Mexican. But I'll just set two other aspects to it. Canelo, for challenging, he's 168 pounds since he's called pound for pound. That's almost a con to me because it's not a title and they call him the best pound for pound. So you're looking at the best fighter in the world, allegedly. But he challenged a true light heavyweight, 175 pound, Mr. Belov. And he got $50 million for being the challenger of a champion. And the champion got $5 million for winning the fight, but he is a Russian. And so he hasn't been paid because of our new Cold War. When they got into the ring, they did not play the Russian national anthem. And I would say that shows a lack of class on many people's part. He wasn't allowed to bring the Russian flag. And they played the Mexican anthem and the American anthem. And they were fighting on Cinco de Mayo. That's a wild subject in itself, because I do have friends from Mexico. And when I say, "You must celebrate Cinco de Mayo," they say, "No, they don't even know what I'm talking about." That's a whole area. But I better get to Luke Barron, who's our authority on boxing. I've decided that from reading his novel. But he has a great description of a famous fight in Britain, and it's beautifully done. Anyway, Luke, did you see this fight? Do you know anything about it?
I did, yeah, and I think you're right that it's a pretty significant fight. It's also interesting because there's a connection to the novel there as well, that's a light heavyweight fight, light heavyweight title fight, and so was the fight in the book, you know, Freddie Mills and Joey Maxson for light heavyweight. So there's a slight connection there. But I think it's true that Canelo was the pound for pound, you know, that's a subjective term, but he was the pound for pound best. You know, he passed the eye test, at least, you know, he looked, appeared to be the best. It's an interesting fight because Bivol, the Russian champion, he weighed in on fight night, I think 182 pounds. They fought at 174. And so the weight difference between the two wasn't actually that significant between their regular weight. So it's an interesting match. You know, sometimes a light heavyweight might weigh in a lot heavier than they're meant to on a fight night. So that's an interesting thing, because Canelo, the big excuse could be for losing the fight that he moved up too far, that he tried to put on too much weight, which could be true. But, you know, if the weight, if there's a little bit of uncertainty there, it might just be that Bivol was a better boxer, you know? So, but yeah, there's a lot going on because, as you said, he is Russian and he was born in Kyrgyzstan, I think, SSR at the time, you know, Soviet Union. And so it's kind of a strange, his mother's Korean as well. And so it's very strange, the whole question of ethnicity and nationality there. Due to the war in Ukraine, the Russian anthem wasn't played, and the WBA doesn't list Russian fighters in their rankings really right now. And so it's very unusual. But Bivol himself spoke out against the invasion, against the war, ahead of time. And so I think that he was personally kind of caught off guard and pretty upset that there were calls for his suspension from boxing just based on his nationality, because, you know, he said he had friends in Ukraine, he has family still in Russia. And so he just said, you know, he hopes the war comes to an end. So he wasn't, you know, he's not, I don't think that there's any reason that he shouldn't be boxing whatsoever, you know? So.
By the way, we're starting to see a really interesting matter with athletes, because I was struck by the fact that in tennis, the Djokovic, I think that's his name, and the Spanish champion, they both spoke out against Wimbledon. They said, and also the French player, I can't remember a single name, but the three greatest players at the moment said, this is not, we're here to compete against the other guys who are athletes, and they don't want to see politics get into it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Bivol said as well. He said that ahead of time. He said, I don't know anything about politics, to be honest. You know, he was frank about that. But he's been boxing since he was 5 years old. And that's his life. You know, he doesn't really, to be honest, probably know much else other than boxing. And he was frank about that. And so
follow his profession.
Yeah. But that's, yeah. So there were calls ahead of time, the Klitschko brothers, you know, the great heavyweight champions who are now very involved in Ukrainian politics, they called for Russians to be banned from boxing outright.
And that specific match.
And yes, they said that Bivol shouldn't be able to defend his title. And he was, you know, a fan of theirs. And I've seen interviews with him where he was also very upset by that, because he thought that was shocking. But the fight went ahead, and then in the aftermath, he hasn't been paid, you know. You know, Canelo, the challenger, is making, I think it's 50 million or whatever it is that he's making.
50
champion. Yeah, 5-0. And the champion makes 5, and he doesn't even get it. So,
I mean, it kind of shows there is something irrational about the our new Cold War, where we're being asked to do and say crazy things. I mean, why hurt the kid? And by the way, Teddy Atlas, who gave tremendous speeches about how he hates Putin, he hates Russia, etc., but he defended Bivol. He says, look, he's a fighter, leave him alone. I like the distinction. I mean, he knew to do that. And if Teddy did it, you have to assume a lot of other fight people agree with that.
Yeah, and, you know, nobody, you know, to ruffle some feathers here, nobody calls for the ban of American athletes when they invade Iraq or, you know, when a similar situation occurs, right? So it's, you know, it is selective. So, and, you know, there's no support in some circles for BDS movements, things like that, but sanctions on Russians at the moment is supported. So there are a lot of questions about the targeting of athletes.
How did you like the decision based on what you saw?
Well, it was a fight where, I guess I'll start at the beginning, you know, kind of the fight, I was surprised when the fight started. Canelo looked very tired from the very beginning of the fight. And I wonder if it's because he went up in weight, you know, whether he's not used to fighting at that weight. So he was looking slow. And that's significant because the end of the fight, the scorecards were 115, 113 to the winner. So that means, you know, you have 10 rounds.
He got to win in the last. If he knocked him down, won in the last round.
Yeah. So Canelo lost by a single round. And he started the fight looking slow. So the first four rounds went to Canelo on all the judges' scorecards. And when you're watching the fight, in my opinion, Bivol won the first four rounds, you know, outright.
Yes.
But there is something that, speaking of Teddy Atlas, I saw Teddy Atlas bring up, where if a fight is stopped based on an accidental headbutt, an injury, or something of that nature, after the first four rounds, it goes to the scorecards. And so whoever's ahead on the scorecards wins the fight, whether it, you know, if it's stopped based on a technicality. And so if there was something suspicious going on with the judging, then you would want to give the first four rounds to the person who needed to win. And that's exactly at that point that Bivol started to get, he started to win rounds. You know, four rounds passed, all three judges gave all four first rounds to Canelo, and then Bivol won the next four rounds. And then all of a sudden it's tied up. But at that point, when you're watching the fight itself, it doesn't seem to be an accurate representation of what was going on. You know, Bivol was very dominant throughout the first eight rounds, and he only picked up speed as it went on. So I do think that the scoring was very inaccurate.
Yes. You're probably aware, and by the way, this is part of the, we have to, I think I do confess, the corruption and the strangeness of boxing has been there forever. I've seen a couple of trainers, American trainers, who were interviewed before the fight saying Bivol's going to win, but he's going to lose the decision. And one of them made an insulting remark about fighting in England. He's just like, you go to England to fight. He said, if you knock him out, they'll disqualify you.
Well, it is. There's boxing is a great sport, you know, for what happens in the ring, but the business of boxing is terrible and very corrupt. And so I do think that there are decisions constantly that are fraudulent, yeah. You know.
You want to swear off sometimes. You say, why am I watching if they're going to do this to the poor guy?
Yeah. But that's the way boxing is. You know, it's not a matter even of people taking dives and people taking, you know, throwing fights in the way that it happens in old movies with the mob, you know. So the boxing world, the whole boxing world, you have careers that are managed. You know, a young prospect will only be matched up with journeymen and then people that they know he's going to beat. And so you'll build up a fighter's career from the very earliest stages, and then all of a sudden he gets a world title fight and he happens to go in against someone who he's better than and he gets the title. And then, you know, it's very carefully managed. And that's one of the things that this fight was interesting for, because I think it represents some of the best and worst of boxing, because Canelo was the pound for pound best. And now that has to be thrown into question because he lost against Bivol, but he took the fight, you know, and he chose to take the fight and he pursued it himself. So he wanted to challenge himself. He didn't want to just sit at super middleweight and, you know, fight people who he knew he could beat. And he went in and took the fight. And if the judges were dishonest, I don't think it was anything to do with the fighter himself. You know, that's related to the promoters. So
he didn't ask him to do that. They knew what they were going to do. By the way, yeah. You're right. People should listen to that long Teddy Atlas discussion of how fights are fixed. He literally talked about it.
Yeah.
And it is actually, you have to listen very closely because it's sort of glued together in a way it might fall apart as an argument, but there's a lot of truth in that about how they set it up. In the case of the fighters, I heard that Bivol actually came in at 180. The fight light heavy is 175, is my memory.
Yeah.
And actually, Canelo came in about 185.
Yeah, and so he, you know, I think that he walks around at around that weight. So he should be fairly comfortable at the weight, but he didn't look comfortable in the ring. And so I don't know exactly what that is. But the other thing about Canelo is he's about 5'7" and Bivol was 6 foot. But when you're fighting at super middleweight, you're fighting a lot of people around 6 feet anyway. You know, the last opponents he had were actually taller than Bivol. So there are questions about size, but I don't know the answer to them right now. You know, you need to dig into that a bit and see what was going on, why he looked so tired and drained. But, you know, he is a small guy for the class he was fighting at in terms of height.
I thought the fight would appeal to you, and I was certainly anxious to interview you about it because you and I had talked about this previous. There is a thing called boxing. It's a technique, and as a matter of fact, I know you prefer the lighter divisions because the basic boxer is a middleweight or even lower. The basic size person in the population. And although in the light heavy division, now that I've been thinking it over in my mind, has produced a lot of really great fighters. Like you, Joy Maxim, light heavy.
It has.
And one of the prettiest light heavyweights I ever saw, and who Ali tried to imitate, was Willie Pastrano.
Yes.
And he's a guy who won by not being hit. It was like fighting a ghost.
Yeah.
And so now in this, I don't know why it hasn't been commented enough. I'd like your thoughts about it. When I saw Bivol, I thought, now this is more like it. This is a box.
Bivol, he did. He boxed. He boxed the whole fight, and that's why he won. And I think, you know, he jabbed constantly. He was throwing out jabs and maintaining range. And his footwork was subtle, but he constantly had control of the distance, you know. And so he was in control of the entire fight beginning to end, as far as I can tell. There was one point where he got his arm around Canelo's head and Canelo picked him up, and that was the only point where he looked out of control, you know. And so, but he was.
I thought that was a confession that he was starting to lose it.
Yeah.
I've seen fighters do that, and they start wanting to wrestle.
Yeah. And there was a point slightly before that, maybe round five or one of the middle rounds of the fight anyway, where Bivol got Canelo up on the ropes and hit him with a few clean shots, and Canelo stood there and, you know, put his hands down and coaxed him on, right? And so, and I think that he was, yeah. But I think you're right, and I think there's a significant thing when we talk about Cold War as well with the boxing that Bivol was doing, because he was boxing really in what I would identify as a Soviet or post-Soviet style, where the Soviet Union, there wasn't professional boxing. There was amateur boxing, you know, just like Cuba had until very recently, until a couple of months ago. And so he boxed with his hands, a tight high guard. You know, his defense was very tight, and Canelo couldn't hit him. And so when he had the jab going and he had his defense tight, you know, he won the fight. And so,
I was struck by I thought that was, again, we're talking, intelligence is rather important for fighters.
Yeah.
And if particularly if you're going to be a boxer, you have to have self-discipline. You cannot make a mistake. You have to be very careful. And when Canelo made that classic bully gesture, you come to me, let's fight. He didn't do it. He just looked.
No.
I thought, boy, now that is smart. He just waited, said, you come on out here and I'll fight you.
Yeah, he was very, very, very composed. And I was thinking that myself. There were a few times where I thought, you know, he had Canelo on the ropes and I was questioning, why isn't he pushing him further, you know? But he knew that he didn't have to, you know, he didn't waste any energy. He picked the shots that he knew would land and maintained control. And then in the later rounds, it seemed to me that he threw more punches because he knew that, you know, when it came to the scorecards, he was going to have to win the later rounds. So he really did start to open up at that point a little more. But I think he fought very, very intelligently and composed and clean, you know, very clean and precise.
Yeah. I read years ago, looked at the story of the great Marciano. And I guess it's okay to use the word great. When I'm thinking back, I wonder about the man. But anyhow, he had a technique which people laughed about it, but it was a smart, he would beat on any part of your body that was available to hit. This thing of hitting people in the arms was his part of his strategy. And you saw the arms of Bevo, that his left shoulder, he took a lot of heavy right hands. I was struck by that it appeared to be a strategy, you know, to bring his hands down and also sap him of energy and maybe even hurt him. I don't know. He was trying to throw a knockout punch into the shoulder.
I noticed that too. And I saw an interview with Bivol the day after the fight, and his arm was just bruised completely. And he said something about the power, and he made a joke, you know, better the arm than the head. But I think it's true that it was a technique that Canelo was trying, and, you know, trying to wear the guard down, maybe because Bivol's guard was so tight throughout the whole fight. He thought maybe if he hit the arms enough, it would, he'd have to drop them, but he didn't. So he must be, pretty strong, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be, I hope boxing goes after the money for the guy. Although I think it'd be, that thing about his intelligence and how he handles things, he could even handle that. In other words, you know, he goes into a dubious gambling center, reeking of corruption and whatnot, and takes on a guy who's supposed to be the best pound for pound. In a way, the satisfaction of beating him right there, looking at him as a character, struck me, he could live with that. Go ahead, steal my money.
Yeah.
You couldn't take the title from me, could you?
No, and I saw an interview with him before the fight where he was asked about how he felt fighting Canelo, the pound for pound best. And he was honest. You know, he said that he had to get himself in a mental place where he didn't think about the fact that Canelo was supposed to be this, you know, the greatest boxer. It was just another fight. And so he got himself, you know, I think a lot of Canelo's power has been so far that people are intimidated by him, you know, but Bivol obviously got into a mental place where he didn't let Canelo intimidate him, and maybe the size allowed for that as well. But I think that's part of the composure as well, I suppose. But Canelo, the other thing about Canelo is Canelo lost his fight with Floyd Mayweather, and he only got better afterwards.
Thank you for raising that. Amazing when you think about it. Go ahead.
Yeah. 2013, he went in, and that was, you know, another thing. You know, Floyd Mayweather has all of his own personal issues as a person as well, but you know, for him to take that fight with Canelo when he was up and coming was another good moment in boxing where
Canelo
a good fight
had a
happened.
Title of some type when he fought.
Yeah. And so Canelo only got better after losing that fight. And then he went up and a few years later fought Gennady Golovkin, who was, you know, from Kazakhstan, right? He was knocking out everybody in the division, middleweights across the board, and was feared nobody would give him a shot. And Canelo gave him a shot. And it was a situation where there was corruption, I think, and it resulted in a draw that Golovkin won the first fight, I think. But they went back into the ring again. There was a rematch, and Canelo had improved, and I think he won the second fight, honestly, as well as on the cards. And so I do think that he also improves, you know. And
they had three fights. They only had the two?
They only had the two, and there was talk of a third. I think that if Canelo had won this fight with Bivol, they would have announced a third, a trilogy. But Golovkin's 40 years old, so it would be a you know, a different fight today. But
yeah, although some fighters, when they get a whipping, are not the same guy later.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly he let it be known that he was headed for legendary status. He met Tyson, Mike Tyson, and said, I want to be like you. I want to be a legend, and I'm the greatest, blah, blah. Well, you know, when you get somebody gives you a boxing lesson, it's got to take a lot of steam out of you.
It has to, yeah. We'll see what happens from here, but, you know, he might have bought into his own legacy a little bit too much, and maybe that's why he didn't look good in the ring. But
there is there's a couple of things I got to mention. One is the hovering around all these subjects is performance enhancing drugs, and boxing, probably of all the sports that keep track of these things, is probably the worst. But I can't say that I believe any of them are any good. I mean, there's so many ways to beat the system, but the I notice boxing people are very open. You notice Teddy Atlas talking about it.
Yeah.
Very open about their suspicions about people. And they start with, he didn't have that body a few years ago. Now he's got himself a body, you know?
Yeah. And I get suspicious, particularly if somebody, well, I think that one of the things is there's so much money on the line that if you're a fighter and you know that your opponent is going to be using performance enhancing drugs, what are the chances that you're not going to do it, you know, to try and get the edge, you know, when you're doing everything else to get the edge. And if it's overlooked.
Atlas said he raised that with Bivol.
Right.
He said, you have probably heard this. I have heard it. If it's true, that's a weakness.
Yeah.
Of course, that's Teddy Atlas, who's a champion motivator.
Yeah.
he's that guy in the corner who makes you forget that you're sore and sick, and he makes you get off the
yeah,
go back and fight.
But it's true. It's a very serious issue in boxing, I think. I think that probably most professional boxers are using performance-enhancing drugs when it comes down to it, you know, because I think that the science behind performance-enhancing drugs is a lot further ahead than the testing is. And so they can get around it if they want to. And there's so much money on the line and, you know, so much ego as well.
The famous guys are big enough and needed enough by the promoters that they don't show up for things. And yeah, they say, leave him alone. We'll catch him next week. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then, if you see somebody
catch him, everybody's out all their money. Everybody loses money.
Yeah. But if you see somebody like Manny Pacquiao, you know, Manny Pacquiao is a great boxer and, you know, naturally gifted. But he also, I can't remember how many weight divisions he went up, but he went up something like 8 or 9 weight divisions, you know. And so that's not natural to gain that much weight. And
yes,
that's a huge amount to do. You know, so.
The Mayweather thing, everybody always put the pressure on Mayweather and Pacquiao, but Mayweather said all he has to do is sign this deal on PED and I'll fight
him. Yeah.
I thought that was really, by the way, Floyd is the most irritating person in boxing, but he has, it's the old thing of saying that he basically wins me over because he performs when the chips are on the line, you know?
He does. And Floyd, I think that his personality outside of the ring, you know, it's hard to overlook. But then when you look at his record, and I don't mean the undefeated record, because the undefeated thing, you know, it doesn't mean much. But who he beat is there's almost nobody I can think of who has a record with that many, you know, great champions under their belt. You know, he beat everybody, Oscar De La Hoya and Ricky Hatton, you know, Canelo when he was coming up, Pacquiao. You know, he took on anybody who was available more or less. And there's timing and business matters, you know, that obviously come into it, and questions on whether people were in their prime or not. But I really can't see looking back 50 years from now and not considering one of the best.
Well, as people who appreciate boxing, I have to say he would have to be my favorite, you know, amongst contemporary fighters, because he said, people used to call him Pretty Boy because nobody hit him. I mean, they don't mark him up.
No.
You don't cut his eye and all that stuff. And he's been in with some bad boys. I mean,
he has, yeah.
And yeah, he has extraordinary movement.
Yeah.
And in front of you with that shoulder and his right hand against his ear, and you just keep throwing punches and nothing happens.
Well, that's the amazing thing about it. A lot of defense work, like Bivol, for instance, Bivol in the fight, he couldn't be hit a lot of the time because he was stepping out of range, you know, controlling distance. But Mayweather would stand right there inches away from you and you could touch him, you know.
It's, yeah,
like Pernell Whitaker or somebody like that.
Canelo was throwing everything he had.
Yeah.
And he got a boxing lessons. It's just extraordinary. By the way, we have to credit him. I think maybe you already did. And by the way, we're speaking to Luke Francis Baron, who's author of Fox Hunt, which has a great fight scene in it between Joy Maxim and Freddie Mills, a great British favorite. Now that I've said it, I'll try to remember what I was going to ask you. Oh, yes, Floyd Mayweather. Within seconds of the fight being over, he posted on his, I guess, Twitter account, the receipt he had. he bet $10,000 on Bevo and won $50.
I heard about that.
He wrote under it, easy money.
I wonder how he knew. But I think the thing is I watched a video with Andre Ward, who was a light heavyweight a few years ago, who retired early in the gym with Bivol. And he was talking about his attitude and thought that he was a great fighter. And I think Bivol kind of slipped under the radar because he's only had 19, 20 fights. And the only big names on his resume are Joe Smith Jr., who's defeated Bernard Hopkins, but is not the greatest boxer in the world. And then Jean Pascal, who is the, Haitian-Canadian boxer. He was a great boxer, but other than that, Bivol hasn't had a huge amount of fights. So I think he slipped under the radar, but if you had been paying attention to him, maybe you would have known ahead of time that he would have won the fight.
Mayweather looked at the tape, he would say, that's a boxer. And that's all you're going to need. You're a true light heavyweight. You're taller and with reach and footwork. And a lot of people, I wish more people would talk about it. The ability to move your feet. This thing of, oh, go get him. You can't get him if your feet aren't in position. There's no way.
Yeah. And that's one of the sayings that I had a boxing coach who said, you have to always be moving your feet, your head, or your hands. And that's true. Maybe two at once.
Yeah. One of the things that I find comical about boxing, and again, hey, this is Luke Barron, author of Fox Hunt, get the book. There's also a great description of a fox hunt. Well, I should have asked you about it during our last interview, but those people make me so angry that I didn't want to mention it. But very often people who are in the ring have done it all, like Bernard Hopkins, and I remember Joe Louis, very poor at picking winners. Did you see that Bernard Hopkins was asked what's going to happen in the Bevo fight? And he's one word answer. He says, smash.
I saw that. I watched that.
And the guy said, smash. He says, like mashed potatoes. He's going to beat. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I saw that. And you know what? Ahead of the time, I was with him, to be honest. I thought Canelo was going to win the fight. And I didn't think it was going to be an easy fight, but I thought Canelo would come out victorious,
But you probably had not seen a lot of this young man.
I hadn't, no. And I was shocked, but I saw that and I'm surprised that Bernard Hopkins was so confident in that, looking back. And I saw another interview with Roy Jones Jr. ahead of the time. He was asked and he said, it'll be a tough fight and I can see Bivol winning. And he was more moderate on it. And then I saw Hopkins, he said, smashed like mashed potatoes.
And he says, how many ways you want me to say it? Smash. And he said, actually, Bernard should have felt himself levitating because he began to say that the only fighter he might have trouble with would be Tyson Fury. And I thought, better calm down.
Speaking of Tyson Fury, the last time we spoke was shortly after the Fury fight, but I think since then it's been a great year for boxing. There is the Fury fight was a huge fight. And then there was the next weekend, I think, was Katie Taylor, the Irish boxer, and Amanda Serrano. That was the first women's fight to headline at Madison Square Garden in history. And it was a great fight. And on the same weekend, there was Oscar Valdez and Shakur Stevenson, which also was a great fight, but was overshadowed a bit by the women, for the first time in history, which I think was great. And then this weekend there was, the last weekend was Canelo, and then this weekend there was another fight. So it really has been a great year for boxing. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of the old days, people taking great fights and.
Yeah, we're going to have to make them behave like people who respect the sport and allow everybody equal chance. If I was Mr. Bevo, I'd say, sure, I'll fight you in Petersburg. How about that? pick a place. Well, maybe Berlin, and say, look, I mean, fair is fair. But there's where we come back to like what the ugliness before World War II, where the Americans had to get the title away from, make sure Schmeling, the German, didn't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a, politics comes into this heavily.
It does. And that's a case, the Schmeling case. For a long time, I thought that he was, you know, you really associate him with the Nazis. But I've heard in recent years that he was kind of, he didn't support the Nazis at all. He helped some Jewish children actually escape from Germany at one point. And then I think Hitler actually threatened to throw him in on a suicide mission when he wasn't supportive of him. And so it's he was associated with the Nazis and fought in Nazi Germany.
He didn't have a problem with fighting Joe Louis, by the way.
He didn't.
There were white American fighters who wouldn't fight Joe Louis.
Yeah.
And did not want Joe Louis to get that title because he was black.
Yeah. And Joe Louis is, you know, just speaking of Joe Louis and great boxers, he was a great boxer as a heavyweight, you know, one of the greatest boxers and it was a heavyweight. So that was an era.
Yeah. No, that's, and lastly, let's have just a little more on Mr. Bevo. And again, we're speaking to Luke Francis Byrne. You got to get the book, by the way. This is, you, if you read the book, you'll have a more of a taste for boxing. I promise you. I just think it's worth mentioning again, this guy, I hope he hangs in there and proves to be as good as he appears to be. And of course, he already has the title, so he can say he is rightly the title holder. I'm struck by his, not only the way he performs in the ring, but the way he handles himself. He was asked about Klitschko, and he said, well, I'm sorry to hear that. He says, he knows we're sporting. This is our sport. You know, and I don't know why he would try to prevent me, and I wish he wouldn't do that. And I don't Kim, and I have no ill will toward him. And by the way, Teddy, that's where Teddy Atlas came in and agreed with him in talking about it. But he strikes me as something we really ought to be looking for in fighters. Maybe we need more amateur boxing, frankly, because amateurs aren't allowed to be such prima donnas, among other things. But he seems to be very intelligent, very smart at avoiding intrusive questions.
And
he's nice, and he never runs down another fighter. Even the guy he beat, he didn't run him down at all.
No, he never did. And he said, you know, afterwards, Canelo's a great champion, you know, and he was very upfront about that. And I think that he's a great example of what a boxer should be in many ways, you know, and his attitude. And that was one of the things in that interview I watched with Andre Ward. You know, that was about 4 years ago. And Bivol was the exact same way. And Ward said it to him at one point. He said, in America, there's a perception that a fighter has to be loud, you know, has to draw attention to himself outside of the ring. And that's the only way to get noticed. But, you know, Bivol, he called him thoughtful and quiet and composed, which is exactly what he's maintained to this day. And he's been heavyweight or light heavyweight champion of the world for 4 years. And so that doesn't appear to be changing. Yeah. But I'd like to see what happens now, because when you look at the light heavyweight division, three of the top five light heavyweights are Russian. So if they're not allowing Russian fights to be sanctioned, you know, if that does occur, the light heavyweight division is going to fall apart completely. Then you have Joe Smith Jr. in there and, you know, a few other people in the top five is all of a sudden empty. So unless...
Yeah,
they hold their fight in
a crisis, because we won't be able to appreciate him, because the hatred we're getting now, Russophobia, and this divide the room language from every quarter, these guys have a hard time making a living. I mean, and also we won't get to see them and appreciate them.
Yeah, and he really is a great boxer, you know, and that's the key thing, I think, as well, that he was in there. And he just boxed as people should be boxing. And that's what won him the fight. And, you know, so it could be a great thing for boxing, that if the light heavyweight division and the heavyweight division.
We needed smarter boxing fans. I wrote in my notes, you know, knockouts equal money. And that's, they're trying to breed people who just hit, knock people down. The boxing is about not being hit and winning, prevailing over a stronger opponent.
Yeah, and the thing about that is it's just harder for them to make a five-second highlight reel out of, you know, somebody missing a punch than somebody getting knocked out. So that's where the money is, you're right.
Jack Dempsey, Gene Tooney. Yeah. You can watch those fights. Tooney beat him twice. But you would think Dempsey was the dominant fighter.
Yeah. But lost. That's the thing in those days when you, speaking of that before we, you know.
Yes, go ahead.
But the somebody like Joey Maxim, you know, we're talking about Joey Maxim. He was in the novel. And he fought Ezard Charles, who was probably the best light heavyweight of all time, 5 times. And he lost every fight with Ezard Charles, but he still fought him 5 times. He kept going back and challenging himself. And, you know, he fought Jersey Joe Walcott 3 times. I think he lost all 3, but he took, you know, the 3 fights, and he fought Archie Moore 3 times. I think he also lost all 3 of those, but he continued to take the fights, and he had over 100 fights, and he's down in history as, you know, not the best light heavyweight of all time, but he's a great name in boxing and, you know, in a lot of circles. So that's something that should be looked at, and you say, you know, whether Bivol takes the rematch, and even if he loses, you know, if Canelo came back smarter or whatever, it would be a great thing for boxing if people weren't avoiding fights, and, you know, great fights happen.
Yeah, we should appreciate those guys. You mentioned Ezard Charles. Think about it. Ezard Charles actually was a natural light heavyweight. He could have stayed at that weight, and he could have cleaned the place out. Archie Moore fought him several times. He beat Archie Moore. I think Archie might have won one. I doubt it, but he might have won one. But Charles, in order to make money, had to go up and fight those big guys who, if they catch you, they're going to hurt you.
Yeah. And Charles, even, I think he might have started out, I might be wrong here, but I think he could have started out even lighter than light heavyweight. He could have started out at middleweight, which, and then went up to light heavyweight when he came back from the war, if I remember correctly.
Oh, he was a beautiful fighter. What did they call him? Cincinnati Cobra.
Cincinnati Cobra. And then he that's where the shoulder roll that Floyd Mayweather did him such great favor came from, I think, because I'm pretty sure that Mayweather took that from James Toney, and James Toney took that directly from Ezard Charles. So you can see that line of talent.
Passing that along. Yeah. One last thing. Do you know, I speculate, and I'm probably wrong, but for me, the title of pound for pound greatest fighter began with Sugar Ray Robinson. I'm not aware if that was around as a term, but if there's anybody who earned it, it was him.
It was Sugar Ray Robinson. And I think when you look back, it's hard, you know, the greatest fights of his career aren't on film, is what they say. And so you can't even appreciate how great he was, but everybody who saw him says that he was the best who ever did it, you know? And when you watch those fights with him and you compare him with the people that were of his era, he was just streets ahead of them. He could have boxed today and been winning fights. So he really was a pound for pound great.
Anybody wants to see the most beautiful left hook ever thrown was when Gene Fulmer thought he had Sugar Ray Robinson. I'm giving myself away. Sugar Ray was backing up, luring the aggressive Fulmer, and Fulmer had never been off his feet. And he ran into the sweetest left hook you ever saw. And they had to tell him. He said he got up and his trainer was there and he was looking at Robinson. He said, Robinson was waving his arms. And he said, boy, he's pretty fresh for 7th round. And the guy said, he knocked you out.
That was a great punch. And speaking of highlight reels, if they had the technology that, you know, we have today, I would love to see that up close and, you know, see what happened. But you get
to see him.
Yeah, but yeah. You get a great angle even on the film they have of that punch, you know.
Yeah. It's great to talk to you about all these things. Particularly, I think we've decided light heavy is a very important division. Speaking to Luke Francis Byrne, author of Fox Hunt, a terrific novel, and contains some fighters, but really it's an intriguing story of the Cold War, and how a bunch of people who intellectually superior to others sold out. Luke, thank you very, very much. It's great to talk to you.
No, it's great to have me. Thank you for having me on. It's been great to talk to you. Yeah.
Now you're starting to sound like me. We're both punched. Yeah,
too many punches in the ring.
thanks again. This is the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.